This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee, with locations on the West Side, Grant Park, the Pocket Bar in the Bank of America Plaza, and even the newest outpost in Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com. I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root Arts in Atlanta conversation. The topic of this conversation is writing in Atlanta. I have the pleasure today of being joined by Alex Gallo Brown and Scott Dartridge, two local writers. Guys, how you doing?
Doing well, thanks, Floyd.
Doing well, Floyd.
Glad to have you guys in. Let's talk about what you're involved in as writers, just to sort of set the conversation and give us some context. Scott, you are the creator and director of Lost in the Letters. Mm-hmm. Talk about that. What is that all about?
That is a reading series that has been going on for just over a year and a half. The first year, we were basically a monthly event. Now we've moved over to a bi-monthly event. But it's a reading series where we feature local and traveling writers, poets, fiction writers, to share their work, with an audience and to get out there. Usually it's, I recommend that they read something that they wrote without the intention of having it published. So it's, they're usually presenting unique work that isn't found in a book or online or anywhere else. So it's kind of a unique experience for the writers and the audience as well.
All right. And Alex, you come from Seattle. You've been here in Atlanta for a little while. So you've been active in the writing circles in Seattle. You've been active here in the writing circles in Atlanta. You've been involved with Wonder Root's own Loose Change magazine, and you've recently self-published a book. So could you talk about that?
Sure. So I was one of the recipients of the Walthall Fellowship last year, which is also sponsored by Wonder Root. And as part of that, I had to create a final project for display in what was originally going to be a museum, now going to be a gallery downtown. And as part of that, I decided to create a book that included my poems along with visual work from the other Walthall Fellows. So, and I also partnered with a local fine arts printmaking press called Straw Hat, who are great, who designed the book and are actually producing hand-bound copies of the book. There's also a chapbook version that I sort of self-produced that's available if people want to check it out,
Cool. Well, let's talk about just the notion of writing in Atlanta. If someone were to ask you guys, what is the writing community in Atlanta about? What would you say?
I mean, it's, I've been here about 2 years. I don't know if I can say what the writing community in Atlanta is about. I definitely think that what Scott does with Lost in the Letters, and, what Laura Aurelia does with Vouched, what Amy McDaniel does with 421 Press, Gina Myers, although she's leaving, sadly, with Lamb House Press. There are a number of kind of movers and shakers in the community who kind of are either have reading series or small presses or literary magazines. There's one, Dear Bear Wolf, right, that just is getting started now. So it all seems to be kind of part of this shifting kind of community that is not totally kind of cohesive, but does seem to be a community.
Right. And I think those are good points that you bring up. And I think what you're saying there is a lot of kind of cooperation. I think there's a lot of people who are proud to be in Atlanta, proud of fellow writers and coordinators in Atlanta. And we're down to like really give each other props. It's not real like cutthroat. There's not a whole lot of kind of like downplaying other people's work. I think everyone is proud of other people's efforts because we want it to continue to grow. We want people to continue to be better writers.
So you mentioned, Alex, some of the resources that are here in Atlanta. Talk about that also, Scott, in terms of what writers have at their, not at their disposal, but within their arm's reach living in the city, in terms of how they can get their work out, heard, even purchased. Talk about that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of great opportunities to get out there and read your work live, through Lost in the Letters. But there's also things like Solar Anus reading series. There's What's New in Poetry. You know, these are pretty good reading series that have been going on for a minute. But then there's other things that are kind of less, I guess, like literary, but things like Write Club, things like Naked City. You know, they do feature people's writing. It's a little different than what you would get other reading series, but I think that provides something for everyone, whether they're really into, like, you know, kind of like formal or informal experimental poetry to, you know, writing comedic pieces about, like, movies or things like that. So there's a few different things out there that people can go out and check out.
Both of you have published work recently, and I wanted to get some sense from each of you on the evolution of your work as you're preparing your work to be published. And what is that like internally as you're working on the craft, but then taking it to editors and then even publishers to kind of get it to that final stage?
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think that it's something that, you know, evolves, you know, probably for most writers. I know I've been publishing, you know, writing and publishing for what feels like a pretty long time now, probably. You know, I had my first article published when I was like 21, and I'm 29 now. So, you know, so you get used to the process, but basically it's like, you know, you work really hard on something. And then I think usually my instinct is to want to send it out immediately as soon as I think it's, you know, done. I think it's good actually to take a step back from it and take your time, because really the writing process is a really, it's a lot of it is just hitting it again and again and again, you know, doing draft after draft after draft. And I think that, like, sometimes young writers don't understand how much effort goes into making a piece of writing feel effortless, you know. and that's what we're after, right, is for it to feel like, when you read it, like it was just kind of breathed. It was just kind of sung. Like, it doesn't even feel like there was any work that was put into it at all. But in reality, there was just an absolutely tremendous amount of work that goes into those pieces. So, yeah.
Yeah. I know for me, I mean, I write because, like, I really enjoy, like, writing. I really enjoy, like, telling stories. So for me, when I sit down, if I have, like, a story in mind, I just write it. And I don't try to think too much about a finished product or what it could be, or what I just write it out. So that way I'm not stopping myself. I'm not inhibiting in any way. I'm just getting it all out there. Then I'll, like, sit on it for a few days, probably work on some other write some other things, then go back to that piece and read it, chop it up, take some things out, change words, add things. Probably do that, you know, a good 3 or 4 times. And then I, you know, there's a few people out there that are down to read work and share it, some friends that are down to exchange work and give feedback. Then it's ready to have other people's eyes on it. They read it, send some notes back, and then probably 2 or 3 editing. Like Alex said, there's just a lot of revision after you finish it. That's when it almost actually all kind of begins. Then after that, you know, it depends on what I want to do with it, or if I want to go try to, if I think it's something that could fit in a magazine or a journal, then I'll start submitting that out. You know, if it's something I'm working on for a larger book project, then I'll sit on it and wait on that as well. But like Alex said, I mean, I've definitely submitted stories to places because I'm really excited about it. I'm like, this is perfect. This is great. And then I submit it, and then maybe I'll go back and read it a few days after I submit it. And I'm like, this is, like, I needed to work on this a little bit more. But it's, you know, there's a lot of kind of, like, eagerness that goes with that.
And there's also something to be said for wanting to get the work out. And sometimes after you've sent it out to even one place, that can help catalyze sort of a new way of looking at it. So,
sure. Yeah,
really so cool. Even if maybe it'll get rejected from that place, or maybe you don't, you're not happy with the version that you sent out, but sometimes that's actually part of the creative process, you know? So,
yeah, that's a good point. I think something I used to do, I used to read stuff at open mics. Not because I wanted to, like, really get a lot of exposure, but because reading it in front of a crowd gave it a completely different life, you know, to get it out there, like, in front of people. You hear the story back to yourself, and you're like, that sounds good, or, like, that doesn't sound good. And so I think that's a good point, Alex. I think once you start getting it out there, you see it in a wholly different way, which is cool.
What do you all think about blogging as a tool for the practice of writing? I know lots of writers blog about their work, or they use that as a place to get more eyes on it, get feedback. So what do you all think about blogging, given that we're in this sort of different media culture that we're kind of wrapped in right now?
I think it's something that's very prevalent. I don't necessarily do a lot of blogging. I keep my own journal to myself that's more kind of private. I like things, my work that goes out public, I want it to be like crisp, and I want it to be really ready for public eyes. My thought is, like, it depends on who's doing it. You know, some people, that's how they get their feet wet. That's how they get their words out there. That's cool. And sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's not. So it kind of depends. But it's definitely something that is, like, very prevalent. So, you know, take it for what it is.
Yeah, I was struck by what Scott said about the idea of, like, private journaling, you know, because I've definitely been thinking lately about, you know, I spend as much time on Facebook as anyone else. Well, you know, I don't know how much time other people spend on Facebook, but you know, and on the internet in general, but there's something, I mean, ultimately I think if you want to write and not like post, you know, if there's a distinction that can be made between those things, like the writing is kind of, it's a private form of communication, I think, and it's something that you keep kind of close to yourself until maybe the moment when you feel like, okay, now it's, I can make this public. But there's something about kind of the Facebook world that's just sort of relentlessly public that it makes me think that it actually sort of crowds out the private life, you know, and makes it hard to kind of hear that inner voice that is what I think drives the desire and need to try to create literature, which is what, you know, writers are after, I think.
So take me through your decisions on how to publish your work, or what decisions you went through when it came to actually choosing one process or one outlet over another, whether it was a journal, an online publication, a physical book, a chapbook. Like, what were some of your driving factors on the actual final product of your work?
The chapbook I just put out, like how I made those decisions to the, is that what you mean?
Sure.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, that was a special project, in the sense that, I was part of this fellowship program. There were 11, artists total, 10 of them were visual artists and then me. And you know, it's a year long program. I was spending a lot of time listening to people talk about the visual art world, interacting with these other artists that I was part of the fellowship program with. And I wanted, for my final project, I wanted to collaborate with them in some sense and have my work not be such a, you know, not just literary or textual or written, but more, but to have some visual component. So what I did was I sent one poem to each of the visual artists, and I asked them to create a piece of work in response to the poem. And then I paired the poem and the visual work in the book. So, you know, I had... For that project, I specifically chose 11 poems because there were 11 artists, and I left one poem blank, no visual, and that was supposed to represent me, the writer, in the midst of all these visual artists. So that was that project. You know, I don't know. I know Scott just put out a book, so he can speak to that.
Yeah, I mean, for the book of mine that just came out, that's through Lame House Press. I was reading some pieces that I had written without really having an idea of publishing them, but I thought they went over pretty well when I was doing live readings. And I was doing a reading at Daniel Beauregard's poetry book release party. And then Gina, who runs Lame House Press, was just like, you know, do you have like a manuscript of these pieces, the ones I had read? And I basically had, and I was like, yeah, pretty much. And she was like, well, if you send it to me, we'll see if it's like a good fit to publish. And so I sent it to her. And so, you know, I was lucky enough where that kind of worked out like that. I don't know if it'll ever work out that way ever again with me, but for that particular one, it was. And then just to help promote it, I submitted some of the pieces that are in the book out to journals, out to online journals. And then so that way, you know, it's kind of like leaking, you know, one or two pieces here and there. So that way people read that, and then there's a link to, you know, to the book. And so that way it's just a way to promote it and get it out there.
Now, Alex, you've also self-published a book. So outside of this project, the most recent one with, mm-hmm. with Straw Hat, your first book was self-published, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's
so
true.
So talk about that project, or at least the process of self-publishing a book.
Yeah, I mean, that was also kind of a unique project. I do a lot of different kinds of writing. I write essays, I write fiction, and I write poems. And I feel like each of them sort of has its own kind of universe in a way. So, like, if I write an essay, usually I have some kind of audience in mind or some kind of publication in mind, and so I'll try to send it and publish it with them. With these particular poems, from the language of grief, my father had died suddenly, and I spent, in the years after writing a lot of poetry as part of sort of my grieving process. And I didn't necessarily want to make those – I didn't necessarily want to send them to literary journals. I just didn't feel like – either I didn't know about literary journals that I thought would be a good fit for those poems, or I just kind of didn't want to submit them to that process. But at a certain point, I had so many of them, and there was such a community of grief that I had been part of in Seattle that I really thought it would be, you know, meaningful, valuable to put them out. So – that process, I did it all myself. I did like a Kickstarter and hired a woman to design it. And, my girlfriend helped me with the layout. She took the photographs and I put it out. And I had a little party in Seattle, and a bunch of people came out. And I had two of my friends, one of whom's a hip-hop artist and one who's a poet, perform with me. And, I think it was great. I don't think the book had much of a life outside of that community, but for what it was, I thought it was a meaningful experience. Absolutely.
Now, Scott, you mentioned a couple of times here about reading and your experience with readings. And I wanted each of you to give some perspective on what reading your work actually means for your writing. And maybe it's an iterative process where you read some, you get that feedback from the crowd, and that helps you to write, or I guess revise your writing. So talk about what reading means to a writer and how that helps your process.
Some writers don't like readings. They don't like going to readings. They don't like reading at readings. I really enjoy readings. I love... for if it's an author that I know their work, to read it is one thing, but to hear them read it through their voice with their inflections and their tone makes it come alive in a completely different way. So I love hearing people read their work. As far as me reading my work, I usually mostly read stuff that has been published somewhere else, or it's something that like I feel really strongly about it moving forward in the future. So I don't think I read to get feedback. I can usually feel an audience's kind of like response if they're laughing at things or if they're kind of like cringing at things, or I can feel that, but I don't think that necessarily informs how I'm going to go back and write. But it is nice to present the work in the way that I kind of like hear it in my own head, which could, you know, be very different from the way someone else does. So I like giving the words, the voice of my own kind of voice and having that come alive in another way. I try to take readings, I take them pretty seriously in the sense that, you know, I memorize some of my pieces. I did a reading not too long ago where the entire reading was just from memory. I didn't read anything. It was just something I'd written, but something I like kind of memorized. But it's because I want to create that kind of experience for the audience. And I've seen other readers who have done that, and it's just so impressive and so impactful that I think there's a real opportunity there to make a very unique and special experience for everybody. So, I mean, yeah, I take them real seriously and I try to do as many as I can, really.
Alex.
I actually enjoy giving readings, which is funny because I get very anxious before them. And in the past I haven't necessarily wanted to do them, but when there's something about performing that, you know, so much of writing is solitary and alone and by yourself, and that those are all mean the same things. But so much of it is kind of like on your own, you know, that I think I've been feeling grateful for those moments when I can stand up in front of people and share what I've spent so many months and years sometimes working on. And there's something about the performance too. It's like, I think you said earlier, it gives a different dimension to the work where it's really on the tongue. It's being kind of orated or broadcast or something in a way that, you know, you don't really have that experience when you're writing it or reading it to yourself, you know.
Before this conversation, we all talked about some elements of place informing how writers create their work. And I think I mentioned to each of you, all of us have lived in New York. And there's a writing community there. And a lot of people write about living in New York. And I was curious about how people are writing about living in Atlanta and how they are writing about those things. And I wanted to get some perspective from each of you about the notion of place and creation and how that works and how that really works here in Atlanta. I wanted to get you all's thoughts on that.
Yeah, and that's a really good question. And something that made me think about that, which I hadn't really thought about before. I think there are a few writers in Atlanta that do write about Atlanta. Maybe they don't title their book Living in Atlanta, but Atlanta, the setting of the city, will pop up here and there, and you kind of have to be privy to it to know. You know, Gina Myers, who's a really good poet, her book Hold It Down, that takes place in Michigan, in New York, and in Atlanta. So a large part of that is her coming to Atlanta, moving to Atlanta from the Midwest and Northeast, and kind of like understanding the city. So she talks about MARTA, she talks about dogwood trees, she talks about no one walking anywhere. And so I think there are people who do take that on as a setting, but it's not as obvious as someone who like might write about like New York or like Philadelphia or other larger cities. It's a good question, though. I don't know. What do you think, Alex?
I
think.
Yeah. So most of the fiction that I write is set in Seattle, and I think I did that for similar reasons to what you speak to. I mean, you're from Atlanta, you know, which is that growing up or even now, I haven't read very many books that are set in the place that sort of is most meaningful to me. As far as people who are writing about Atlanta, yeah, I'm not so familiar. I mean, I know they're like Tyree Jones, I think, is an author who's written a couple of books. One is called, I think, Leaving Atlanta. But I'm not. Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe part of it has to do. I mean, New York is like a famously like sort of represented city in literature.
Sure.
But Atlanta is a funny city too, in that like, because I've heard some people describe it as like a postmodern city, in the sense that there's no real like centralized, you know, I mean, it just feels very disjointed, and that like people, you know, it almost doesn't feel like a city to me. It almost feels like all these, this collection of neighborhoods, you know, and I don't know if there really is a strong urban identity in some sense, or a strong kind of collective identity, but that's something that I don't know. I would be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I asked that question because I knew, well, at least the part about New York, because I knew that all of us had lived there. And I felt like in many ways, even if I couldn't pinpoint a specific writer, I just always got the sense that people included New York as a backdrop into so many other things in how they presented the city. And I just, as a someone who was as a native, someone who was born here, I don't always get that feeling. And I talked to Scott. I said, well, maybe I'm not looking in the right place, mm-hmm. or maybe I'm not plugged into the right community. So I was just curious about what this place means and how it also informs mm-hmm. art. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even to a different extent, I'm wondering if Atlanta as a city of transplants, mm-hmm. I wonder if those transplants connect to the city enough from an artistic standpoint, if there are artists who connect to the city, or I guess how they're connecting to the city, if they're doing it in a way that does influence their art so that the city does become a part of their creations. So, I don't know. I do feel like the transplant factor plays some role in it. And if you're coming from Seattle, or you're coming from Dallas or San Francisco or New York, then you're sort of bringing what you did before here, and you're helping to shape Atlanta with what you are bringing to the city, whereas Atlanta doesn't always change you. You sort of can help shape it. And in other cities, you tend to, I think, become shaped by the experience, especially living in New York.
Well, let me ask you. I don't want me to put you on the spot, but I would love to hear, as a native Atlantan, I mean, what kind of books, what kind of stories, what kind of narratives, you know, do you want to see written, you know?
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com. I think your point about Atlanta being a collection of neighborhoods is pretty accurate. And so I'm not sure if there's enough consistency among all of those neighborhoods for someone to write about Atlanta and have it feel like everyone can relate to that experience, because living in Marietta is different than living in Decatur, which is different than living in College Park, which is different than living in Emin Park. So I think that maybe some art that maybe can find that commonality, or search for that commonality, because I think that there are some things that are common, but maybe we take those things for granted, or maybe we don't often stop and observe what's common about living in the various cities, or I guess the various neighborhoods that comprise the metro area. So, that's a very good question. And I guess I would like to see more investigation of that. Maybe even investigating the differences of this metro area could be something that pulls more people in. Scott, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I think what people can do, or like actually do at times, is they write about their specific experiences, and maybe so they're not writing about every neighborhood, but they're writing about, you know, one particular street or one particular tree or one particular building or something. So it might not be as like encompassing as the entire city, but it's maybe one particular thing that does exist in the city. So I think it can be represented. And maybe people are writing it, and maybe I'm not aware of it. Maybe us three people aren't aware of it, but maybe it is out there. I've written stories that have taken place in Atlanta. Again, it might not be as explicit, but you know, they're out there, and if you read it, you would probably understand that. I think something that's pretty prevalent in Atlanta is you get, like, I'm going to stay away from the term like Southern literature, but you get people writing about living in the South in general. Mm. You know, the way that the nature and the way that's different than other regions, and, you know, dialect and, you know, houses, geography, architecture, all that kind of stuff. I think you get a lot of people writing about being in the South. So maybe not just Atlanta specific, but like, you know, everywhere from like Mississippi to Florida to Tennessee and Carolinas and back again. So that, I think that has a house, that has a home here as well.
You know, and as you mentioned that, I would love to hear more stories about maybe downtown Atlanta, mm-hmm. or the non, I guess not non Southern or urban centric lifestyles, but more so the city elements of Atlanta,
yeah.
And maybe how that is in contrast to this overarching notion of a city in the South.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think even with the South, I don't see enough of those distinctions, because Georgia is different than Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Those are different than the Carolinas. I feel like there are subtle differences about most of the Southern states that don't often get talked about. But within those few sort of urban centers in the South. I would love to hear more stories about that.
Right. All right. Well, Alex, maybe we got homework.
Write some, there you go.
Stories.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point, though. And when you brought it up, I had to definitely sit and think about it and try to come up with a, you know, decent thoughts about it. So I think it's a good point for sure.
Yeah.
I would love to get you all to ask each other some questions, just as fellow writers, fellow artists, people who are moving in some of the similar circles here in the city, but still have some differences. What questions do you all have for each other? I know, Alex, you're still a recent transplant to the city. Scott, you've been here for a while. Some shared experiences, but also some major differences.
Yeah. Do you think living in Atlanta, do you find yourself writing about, I mean, I read your recent book, Relief, and you talk about your house, you talk about your backyard, you talk about some of those relationships. Do you think being in Atlanta has impacted your work? Like, kind of picking back off of Floyd's question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think all of our experiences heavily, you know, influence our work and ourselves and the people that we are. I'm kind of surprised that I haven't written more about living here. I mean, like, poems will be said here, but they're also very kind of internal and mm-hmm. sort of personal and aren't really so much about the broader landscape of the city or the region. And the stories, which I feel like, at least in my work, do tend to take into account more of the kind of cultural and social and political things that are going on, I have had a hard time writing about here, or I haven't really tried too much, but I think I've definitely am sort of acutely aware of being an outsider, being a northerner, being... I had somebody say to me on the street once, I was asking for directions, "Are you from the north?" Which I thought was so funny. But, you know, I'm very aware of being outside. And some of that has to do with, you know, I mean, some of that is racial. I think that you know, there's... it seems like, you know, Atlanta is a majority black city and with also, you know, sort of half and half black and white, southern black. And like, you know, I don't feel like I really fit into either of those groups, you know. I definitely feel kind of outside. But it's been interesting to observe, you know. And I definitely feel like I've had experiences here it totally has kind of upended all of my assumptions and beliefs about lots of different social things. You know, Atlanta is, I think, unlike almost any other place in a lot of ways, you know. I mean, I've lived in Seattle, I've lived in New York, I've lived in Portland, Oregon. And Atlanta is like its own beast, you know. So it's been great, but I haven't really felt like I've wanted to necessarily try to add my voice. You know, I feel like people who are from here need to be writing their stories about living here, you know. What about you? I mean, you're from here, more or less, Ackworth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like, you know, in the way that, like, I want to write about Seattle, and I feel like that's, like, sort of an imperative that I have. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you feel like you need to do, is tell stories about Ackworth, or?
Yeah, I can't remember who said it. I want to say it was Ernest Hemingway, but he was basically like, it's very difficult to write about a place while you're living there. He's like, it's easier once you've gone away from that place, because you can look back on it in your memory and describe it, you know. But when you're in it, it's hard to kind of separate yourself from it and write about it in a kind of like objective way. So yeah, I think I have written stories where I've been in Atlanta, you know, where Edgewood is in there and like Little Five Points Pizza is there. I mean, not by name necessarily, Edgewood is. So I've written a couple of those. The most, I mean, so I Hope Something Good Happens, a chapbook. That all takes place in Ackworth. That's from like 2002, 2003. So that's when I was in high school. So I'm telling a lot of those stories. The project I'm working on now is a collection of short stories that basically take place from my time in Georgia to Kentucky, which is from the age of like 18 to like 25. So I'm still like working on like remembering those stories and getting those on paper and getting those in a place where, you know, I want them to be presented to the public. So probably soon, because I'm like living now, right, in the near future, I'll probably be writing about this time, you know, these past couple of years. So I think it probably will come out more than it has already. But yeah, I think most of my stuff is more kind of like being in the South in general and not necessarily specific to Atlanta.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
How do you want to see this Atlanta sort of writing community grow, change, develop? You know, what do you think are its strengths? What do you think are its weaknesses?
I think its strengths are the positive attitude towards everyone. And I don't know everyone that's writing. There's a ton of great writers, ton of reading series publishers in Atlanta that I'm not aware of. You know, I'm a very small part of it. So I want to get to know a lot of it better. I think for the people that I do know, I want everyone to just continue to challenge themselves to get better and better. You know, I think a lot of people are, you know, publishing work, which is great. And I want everyone to continue to want more themselves, to want more of each other, to continue to support each other, to continue that kind of like challenge to get better, to discover more about ourselves. So I don't want everyone to just be like, hey, we're all doing a great job. Like, let's go like drink beers now. I want people to be like, hey, we're doing pretty well. Let's go write more. See you next week. You know, I want that challenge to continue to come about.
So. Scott, do you consider yourself to be an Atlanta writer or a Southern writer? Like, how do you even classify yourself within the context of where you are?
Yeah, well, so I'm from Acworth, which is about 30 minutes north of Atlanta, which is up until recently was a pretty rural place. After I got out of high school, I lived in Kentucky for 6 years, came back to like Atlanta proper for about a year before moving to New York. And then I've been back in Atlanta for about 2 years. So I haven't really been in Atlanta for like a long stretch. But I have been in the South for a long time, especially time in Kentucky. I think in the Northeast, it made me see the South in a different way, because kind of like Alex was saying, how he feels here sometimes, like I felt like that in New York. I was like, man, this isn't my home. This isn't my place. Like, and it was an amazing experience, beautiful place. But when I came back down here, I was like, dude, this is, and I felt so settled. I was like, felt ready to like do things. So I feel like I'm like, this is where I'm from. Atlanta, you know, like I said, I'm kind of from outside of it. So I think the longer I'm here, the more kind of like ingrained I'll be in it. More general South, more Georgia in focus, I guess.
And I guess I was wondering from a label standpoint, because we like to put labels on things, but also, you know, wondering what that label means to you, because I feel like in certain art forms or in certain places, being a fill in the blank city, this means something. And I'm not quite sure what being an Atlanta writer means, or what being a Southern writer means, or a Georgia artist. What does that mean to you, or what does that label mean for artists like yourself?
Right. I think there's a really rich tradition of writers coming out of the South, whether people want to call that Southern literature or whatever. I mean, whatever they want to call it, it is what it is. And there's a lot of great writers who are writing about this region and their particular home state. And it's a lot of it, you know, the champions and the kind of like the kind of icons of that are great writers. I love reading their work. You know, I love reading Faulkner and Flannery O'Connor. You know, those are good people to read. And so I don't know for myself how that necessarily influences me, besides the fact that they're just good writers, but I've read a lot of good writers from a lot of good places. I think if people from the outside see writers coming out of the South, they might make that association automatically, which is probably a good thing, you know, unless they don't like those writers, then it can be a bad thing. But at least you're coming with people that have preceded you, which is a good thing. So
often we talk about being able to have a global career from Atlanta, especially among the visual artists, where we are, and I say we, I mean here at Wonder Root, where we talk about how to have a career where you can live in Atlanta, but also create work that may stretch as far as it can go. So when we just talked about writing and location and being in a place and how that informs how you're writing, and what you produce. Alex, as someone who's been here for a shorter period of time and your work still may have its roots in Seattle, but you're living here, how do you perceive the challenge, I would say, of being a writer or an artist in general that creates work for a larger audience, but living here in Atlanta where your work may be rooted somewhere else, but you're still living here?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something I've been sort of struggling to figure out lately in the sense of like, sort of who am I writing for? What community kind of do I want to, because it feels like right now there are all of these sort of sub communities and subcultures, and especially with the internet, as much stuff is going on with the internet, there's much less of a kind of, you know, I think culture used to be much more centralized, you know, like you'd get the New Yorker if you were a certain class of and sort of education level, and you'd watch the five news channels, and, you know, everything was fairly, there was these sort of these megaphones of culture that people kind of, most stuff got filtered through. And like now there's just all kinds of stuff. You could be writing, you know, you could publish in any number of kinds of places. So I think a lot of it is just seeking out things that you do believe in, you know, communities that you really do think are saying interesting, important stuff, and then trying to, yeah, participating in those. So, because they're really, I mean, there are like 10,000 literary magazines, you know, most of which, you know, like four people read. So, you know, if you really believe in the mission and the work that's being put out in a particular literary magazine, I think that that's the place that you should seek to publish, you know. And I think that feels the best, as opposed to, I mean, there's the other way is to sort of look for the most sort of prestigious and sort of the best and try to get your work into those. And like, you could do that too. But and to some extent, you have to be trying to advance your career, I guess, if you want to keep doing it in any kind of professional way. But I think just as important is finding those communities that you feel like you want to be a part of, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think kind of goes back to what I said of challenging yourself. So people challenging themselves to make good work, right? And whether that leads to a career or not or whatever, the idea that you can create something that then finds itself in someone else's hands, either in Atlanta or San Francisco or Toronto or whatever, the fact that they can see your work and be inspired by it is a really powerful thing. So, and that is kind of a global thing, right? And we can learn so much from people living in other places. And we have with the internet, there's such an opportunity to do that. So, yeah.
Well, as we wrap up here, or getting close to it, let everyone know where they can find out more about your work, Scott and Alex, or what you're most passionate about right now.
I have a website. It's my name with no hyphen, alexgallerbrown.com.
I'm going to be, I don't know what the range of this podcast is. I'm going to be doing a reading in Knoxville on Thursday. I'm going to be in Savannah in early August. I'll be in Lexington, Kentucky in like late August. So if you guys have that kind of reach, then I don't know, if people are in those areas, they can come see me read at various places. But then other than that, I'm like just doing work, and a lot of that can be found online. I have a website as well. It's a not much is really sacred.com. So that links to a bunch of different kind of stuff.
And actually, I have in September, I'll be reading at the Walthall opening at Gallery 72, which is in downtown Atlanta, if people want to come out for that.
All right. And final thoughts from each of you on writing in Atlanta, the Atlanta writing community, your own careers in Atlanta right now. Just final thoughts on that from each of you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm encouraged by what's going on in Atlanta and what I've seen over the last couple of years. I mean, I would like to see it. I don't know how to, I mean, kind of, I guess, to speak back to what, or to refer back to what we were talking about before, like, I'd like to see the community engage more with the city and more with the problems of the city, you know, and as well as the good things going on in the city. But, you know, we were talking earlier about this University Avenue project that Wonder Root was involved with, and this was an effort to put public art in the neighborhood of Pittsburgh, which is a kind of a working class neighborhood down in Southwest Atlanta. And I would love to see the writing community try to engage in these kinds of projects that really do grapple with the political, cultural, social issues of our city and our day. I think that's what great writers and great artists can do. And sometimes I think that the writers and artists in Atlanta can be a little apolitical and a little sort of like, we're going to have our little community over here and not really engage with what's going on in the broader city,
Yeah, it's a good point. So something that we're doing, and I'm going to get in trouble if I don't shout this out, but is the Letters Festival, which Alex played a huge role in that last year, and the planning for this year as well. But that's a festival that went on last year. And we're doing it again this year. It's a 3-day event. We bring in writers from kind of all over the country and feature local writers as well. That is an opportunity, we think, for people to come see people read their work live. And it's a variety of writers, from high-quality emerging writers to very established, reviewed, kind of like very revered writers. But they do live readings. We do free workshops. We're doing a free discussion panel this year with the idea of having challenging conversations as well as enriching people to go be better writers and inspiring them to go seek out good writers and to be better writers themselves. So that's something that I think, Alex and I, as we were talking about that last year, we were able to kind of take on that challenge, to kind of what you talked about. And so, that is theLettersFestival.org. And there's going to be a lot more coming out about this year's event soon. So people should look out for that. It's going to be November 6th, 7th, and 8th. So there should be more information about that coming out soon.
Scott Daughtridge and Alex Gallo Brown, thank you both for your time.
Thank you, Floyd.
Thanks, Floyd.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee, with locations on the West Side, Grant Park, the Pocket Bar in the Bank of America Plaza, and even the newest outpost in Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com.